Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how has Leket Israel's work changed since October 7th? Leket Israel, the National Food Bank, is the leading food rescue organization in Israel. Unique among all other organizations that serve the poor in Israel and food banks worldwide, Leket Israel's sole focus is rescuing healthy surplus food and delivering it to those in need through partner nonprofit organizations. Joseph Gittler is the founder and chairman of Leket Israel. He grew up in New York and moved to Israel in 2000. He founded the organization 3 years later after witnessing significant food wastage in Israel at a time of rising poverty. Joseph has been frequently honored for his work for the benefit of Israel's needy. He's been named one of the 50 most influential Jews in the world by the Jerusalem Post, awarded the Nefesh B'Nefesh Bonei Zion Prize for his contribution in the field of social welfare as an immigrant to Israel, and in 2010 received a presidential citation for volunteerism from the late Israeli President Shimon Peres. This week, Joseph is speaking with us about Leket's work and different ways you can help them to combat hunger in Israel.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Joseph. First, before we begin anything else, could you tell us what Leket means?
Sure. So Leket is one of the biblical terms. There were three: Leket, Shicha, Upeya. And these were the commandments for farmers in ancient times on how they needed to take care of the poor. So you may remember leaving a corner of the field or things that fell off the wagon, being left behind for the poor. And that's really what we are. Leket is a gleaning society, and that's really the word in English. And it means that we work with, in biblical times, it would have been with farmers. Today, it could be with all different types of food producers who have more food than they need or that they can sell, and making sure that it goes to those who need it.
Before we actually talk about Leket, could you tell us a little bit about your own background, where you're from, what you studied, and how you ended up in Israel?
Sure. So I'm 50 years old, and I grew up in New York City. My wife, Lila, we met in Bnei Akiva summer camp in Israel when we were 15, and we've been together since then. She's from Toronto, and we were married. I studied at Yeshiva University. I studied at a law school in New York City. We came to Israel. I worked in the high-tech sector for the first few years. We came in September 2000, so we've been here almost 25 years. And I just decided, not because I didn't enjoy what I was doing, but we came right when the Intifada started. And I just found it so painful to see so many Israelis struggling to make ends meet who weren't from the communities that we are more used to those struggles coming from. Unfortunately, you know, COVID and now this war, we're feeling those exact same areas of pain once again, primarily having to do with hospitality and people working in airports and hotels and tour guides and all that area of the economy, which is getting hit once again. And so for me, it was just so painful to see regular, normal people who had decent jobs, could pay their bills, and suddenly they just couldn't out of nowhere. And that's sort of how Leket was born.
Are most of the needy located in any particular place in Israel or among any particular groups of people aside from those professions?
Yeah. So I would say, look, in normal times, so there's poverty all over the country. And that's not surprising. It's a Western country, Western capitalistic country. And so we're no different in that sense than the United States or Canada. You know, European countries have sometimes look at poverty differently, and there's a greater social safety net. So there tends to be less poverty in most parts of Europe. But Israel, let's say, unlike the United States, most of our poverty is urban poverty, city poverty. Most of the kibbutzim, moshavim, where the rest of the population lives has very little poverty, which is a big difference. You know, the centers are Jerusalem, sadly the poorest city in Israel, the Bedouin community, the ultra-Orthodox community, Ethiopian community, and this probably won't be surprising to a lot of your listeners. And then you just have people who are working, and they just simply don't earn enough money in their chosen or maybe unchosen profession. You know, you can have people who come from Ethiopia, and maybe in Ethiopia they were able to get by in the structure of Ethiopia, but in Israel, they maybe don't have the right education or language skills, and now they're working in jobs which we need. We need people to work in these jobs. And unfortunately, often in Western society, those jobs don't pay enough money. And then people need additional help besides the money they earn in their profession.
Yeah, this is an issue in the United States with the minimum wage being $7.50.
I'll tell you bring up the minimum wage. Israel's been very good. The minimum wage has grown dramatically in the last 20 years in Israel. It's actually kept ahead of inflation. But it's, you know, again, everything's your starting off point. So if you're starting off at a very low income, and Israel's expensive, especially when it comes to housing and the cost of food, and people are burning so much of their income on those two areas, leaving them with very little for other necessities. I'm not talking about luxuries here. You know, and you read, and it's just very hard. There was just a piece over the weekend in one of the Parsha sheets that I read in synagogue when I wasn't praying and I was just reading the Parsha sheets, and they were interviewed a number of families who, with the increase in VAT as of January 1st, and Israel increased electricity prices, water, pretty much anything that could be increased. And I understand why we're doing it. We're in a tough spot here because of the war economically. And these are people who, you know, were just kind of getting by with their limited means with that cost of living. And now on January 1st, their expenses have arisen, not from anything they did wrong, just because their electricity bill up, their water bill up, school fees up. And that's why our job at Leket is just to keep on trying to grow as much as we can, because one of the beauties of the work that we do is we take your shekel of donations and we turn it into usually 4 to 5 shekels worth of food. So it's a very good leverage on stucca dollars. And then that goes straight to people who are struggling to make ends meet.
We'll get to how you do this in a bit, but could you first tell us how you began? Did you do this alone? Were you working with other people?
So when we started, the we was a royal, it really was just me. And I was disturbed by poverty on the one hand and by food waste, which we all see in so many areas of our life, including in our own homes, on the other hand. And I just said, this is crazy. People talk about this. No one's doing anything about it. So I just opened my yellow pages, which doesn't exist anymore. The internet, I looked up wedding halls, catering halls, and I just started to call them. And I knew the answer that they have leftover food. And I knew the answer that they give a little bit to the families and then the staff eats. And then even after that, there's usually a lot left over that goes to waste. And I said, would you give it to me? I'll distribute it to the poor. I didn't get a lot of who are you? Are you going to resell it? What if the food goes bad? It was really just, we know there's a lot of need. You sound like an okay guy. When can you pick up the food? And that's how I started going out in my car at midnight, 1, 2, 3 in the morning to these halls and getting help, hopefully from waiters who hate throwing away the food themselves, and then packaging it up and delivering it at night to agencies in the area. I live in Ra'anana, so in the area around here, Herzliya, Kfar Saba, Ra'anana, Hod HaSharon, that was in the beginning. And then, of course, today we work countrywide.
So you delivered the food to agencies, not to individual people.
Yeah, from day one, that was the decision because I felt like this is going to be bulk food and it's going to be how many more volunteers would have I needed from day one if I got 300 meals in an evening? If I even say I'm going to distribute those 20 meals per family, that still means 15 drop-off sites. So instead, and it was the right decision because if you look at the structure of most food banks and food rescue organizations around the world, mostly what they do is they're the middleman. They bring it to smaller agencies who are focused on helping the needy. Our job is to find sources of food, figure out how to get them logistically, efficiently, cheaply, and then bring them today 350 agencies from all sectors of Israeli society from Eilat to Metula.
Because then there's, of course, the issue of keeping the food fresh.
Right. So Cooked food specifically is only delivered to agencies where it is eaten at the agency. So that will be a battered women's shelter or an after-school clubs for kids or a homeless shelters. We don't allow that food to then be repackaged and retransported to people's homes. It's just too many stops.
I've read that you grow the food that you distribute.
So that's not exactly correct. We have one farm where we grow stuff to fill in gaps and also as an easy centralized place to send the tens of thousands of volunteers who come to Lekki a year. But in normal times, 98% of what we distribute is food that we rescue from farmers because of a lack of markets or low prices or damage, ugly fruits and vegetables, as we call it. The only other place where we really sort of pay for food is we have a soup project where when we get too much of a specific crop and we're having trouble distributing it, we may then go to a company who we then pay and turn it into soups for us.
You mentioned catering halls and restaurants. Do you also get donations of food from supermarkets or from individuals?
Israeli supermarkets, and this is a compliment, tend to be a little bit tighter with their supplies. They hold on to things a little bit longer than maybe supermarkets we grew up in. And I'll put it to you differently. If I had as much money as I needed, then I would work much more closely with supermarket chains. But because we have a limited budget, even if it's been growing over the last few years, we've seen that the type of bulk we can get from farmers is so much larger. You know, we can go to one farmer and get 100 tons of tomatoes, or we could go to 40 supermarkets and over the course of 6 months get 100 tons of tomatoes. So it's just a decision based on budget and output, I would say for now. We've also seen the supermarkets have gotten better over the years. You know, as things get closer to expiration, they're starting to figure out more and more to sell that off price. You know, if you go to a Shufersal after 8 o'clock at night, the baked goods start to be 50% off and 75% off because they want to get them out the door. There's also been a lot of apps built over the years, which are, you know, I'll give an example. There's an app that a lot of restaurants use. So at the end of the day, if they have a couple of meals left, they go on this app and they offer it for half price, and then people can come and pick it up. So there's a lot of activity. It's exciting because this area, food rescue, food waste, when I started 20 years ago, was not really talked about much. And now it's exciting to see. But I will say, with all the apps and all the subscription businesses selling ugly fruits and vegetables, less here, more in the United States at least, there's so much waste that there's more than enough work for the Lekkits of the world to do for a very long time.
Your website says that you have nutrition education workshops for at-risk populations. Can you tell us about them?
Sure. So we have two on-staff nutritionists, and we also have freelancers who we hire. And we connect with community centers and schools and different organizations and offer nutritional training. And it's offered to anyone, but it's primarily women, mothers, caretakers. And it's been a big focus on the ultra-Orthodox community, where the women all cook. And we want to make sure that they're offering their children the highest quality food that they can based on their budgets, from a health point of view, from a nutrition point of view, from a caloric point of view. We've done work in the Ethiopian community. We've done work with the Israeli Arab community. Everyone can make use of, again, of this type of education, but like every project, you know, we have to get to the people. And that's everything. You know, if you had one line about Lekki, I would say trying to get our initiatives to the people who need it most. Everyone needs what we're doing, but again, with limited output, let's get it to the people who need it the most.
Are most of the people who work with you employees or volunteers?
So we have, I'm proud to say, over 175 employees who work for Lekki. But in addition to that, let's just put since October 7th, we're over 100,000 people have come to volunteer with Lekki since then, either working at farms around the country, primarily in the South. Now we're starting to send more and more volunteers to the North and to work in our distribution center, sorting and repacking fruits and vegetables.
So you're also helping farmers who've been evacuated.
Yes, that's let me put it like this. Since October 7th, we made a 180 degree turn. We still take care of the poor. That's our primary mission. But we understood after October 7th that there were a lot of farmers who were at risk of going out of business, And if they go out of business, that will have a short-term and a long-term risk of nutritional security for this country. Israel, because of our history, the history of the Jewish people, we need to look at nutritional security differently than other countries. The world could turn on us. It's done it before. And so we need to be pretty self-sufficient. It doesn't mean that we need to have all types of produce at all times during the year. And we're used to that in Israel. Seasons exist in Israel. We don't get strawberries 4 or 5 months a year. We don't get mangoes 6 months a year. And you learn to live with it. It's okay. But we were very concerned if too many farmers go out of business, that could be a real risk to the country. And so we've been sending volunteers to farmers. We've been paying for buses to send the volunteers to farmers. We've been buying crops from farmers who have struggled to sell crops at certain times. We established 2 loan funds to make loans to farmers. And we had 1 grant fund in the South to help farmers buy replacement equipment. And now we are trying to raise money to do the same thing for the North.
So tell us about these volunteers. Are they all Israeli? Do they come from other countries?
Everywhere, you name it. I mean, I think, you know, our number one source of volunteers is probably Israeli corporations. And they're great because they don't ask us to pay for the bus and they don't ask us for anything. And often they donate money as well to Leket. And that's in the tens of thousands of years and from all types of businesses, but primarily tech, you know, especially multinationals, who it's a big part of who they are and what they do. You know, that corporate social responsibility. And then you name it, federation missions, synagogue missions, individuals, especially after October 7th, we've had thousands of people who specifically either alone or with their spouse or with their families came to Israel, not to have a good time, but to help. And so that's been very, very important mentally for everyone in this country to see people continuing to come and seeing them volunteer. And that continues, by the way. And that may continue for the long term. It's going to take a lot of these farmers a couple of years to probably bounce back and to be as self-sufficient as they were before. And so programs that we never did before, if we sent in the past volunteers to farmers, we took the crops. Now we are willing to, and for the time being, we'll continue to send volunteers to farmers, and the farmers can keep the crops for themselves. And often they'll tell us, can you also buy them Leket? So it's not our normal business model. We hope to get back to what we normally do very, very soon, but we're not quite there yet.
So if someone from outside Israel wants to volunteer, how long would they normally be there? And would they do exactly the same thing as the Israeli volunteers?
Most people come to volunteer with Leket for a few hours, but we do get people who write to us and say we want to come and volunteer for a few days. So they may come to our picking site, they may come to our warehouse, and then there are many, many opportunities to help at farms in the South, all over the country. And so, you know, we can help them make a schedule, but often we'll just put them on different WhatsApp groups and then they make their own schedule. In addition, now we still have buses, daily buses, going from different points of the country. So every day you'll be ending up at a different farm doing different kind of work. And yeah, everyone's doing the same thing. The only thing sometimes Israelis do is maybe sometimes we have Israelis who go out at night and pick up and still collect food from wedding halls. That's, you know, more of someone who has their own car here and speaks the language. But in general, everyone's doing the same work.
Can you tell us anything about the profiles of these volunteers, how old they are, where they're from?
Everywhere. I mean, of course, all ages that feel comfortable. Of course, the U.S. is always the number one source of that just because it has the biggest Jewish community. We used to get a lot more evangelical Christians. That slowed down since the war started, but I have no doubt they will come back. But really, anyone you can think of. In the summer, we'll get lots of camp groups and youth groups from the U.K., from North America, from France. We just had a whole mission, actually, of people who came specifically to learn about and volunteer with Leket from France for 3 days, about 50 people. It was incredible. In our winter, we'll get people from South Africa and Australia, especially, again, camps of kids who are coming here. We'll get a lot of the year-long programs. You name it. It's a real mix. And the only thing I'll say is, please come to work. You know, Instagram posts are great, but those are secondary.
Aside from volunteering in Israel, if any of our listeners would like to help, what else can they do?
So, look, volunteering is number one. I'd say number two is helping spread the word. And of course, financial donations. It's a big operation. It takes a lot of money, frankly, to run this show. And we have American tax ID, Canadian tax ID, French, Swiss, Australian, British. And if we don't have where you're from and you're interested, we'll help figure it out together with you. We love when we have bar bat mitzvahs who reach out to us, and hopefully they can come to Israel and volunteer. But if they can't, sometimes they'll raise money for us, or they'll do a program where they raise awareness about food waste. It really spreading the word is very, very important. It's been the major catalyst for us being able to get to where we are today. The fact, for example, that we've had around 500,000 volunteers over the last 10 years.
And of course, we'll include a link to your website on this
Thank you so
program.
much. Yes, www.leket.org.
Have you had any support from any official government organizations or any specific problems?
We do not get a ton of funding from the government. I wish it was more. That's a bit historical when it comes to food provision in the country and tax codes and what the government thinks is a good use, because the government also has limited budgets. But we have gotten better over the last few years. And in 2024, we did get a few million shekels from the government, and that seems to be growing. And I hope that'll continue. It's very specific. One project is to provide 5,000 fruit and vegetable boxes a month to the needy, where the government chooses who those people are. So that's, we do it. The government basically pays us per box to do that. And it's a very good deal, because if they gave those people the same amount of money, they would get maybe a third of the amount of crops that we're providing. That's the real core of Leket's mission. And we get some money for work we do with the Bedouin community specifically. We have a food waste report that we put out every year that we get money from the environmental ministry. And then there's all other types of funding, but it's still only a small part of our budget. I hope it will grow.
I see also that you have boards of directors in other countries. Where are they and what do they do?
So the boards of directors in the other countries are due to the fact that, for example, our American Friends of Leket must be, according to IRS rules, an independent body. Okay, and so we need it needs its own board, independent of Leket. Yes, it exists to raise money for Leket, to market Leket, to get the word out, to find volunteers. And these are wonderful people because they're not setting the policy, which is what everyone wants to do that. Everyone wants to set policy, think about the future projects, what we're going to do, what we're not going to do, work with the CEO. And these friends of organizations are really focused primarily on getting the word out and raising money. So I applaud them if any of them are listening to this.
Which countries are they in?
US, Canada, the UK, and France are the primary ones. I think we'd like to build something in Australia going forward. In France, it's totally volunteer run because of language issues. We just don't have anyone in our senior staff that's comfortable enough in French. In the US, we have an office in Teaneck, New Jersey, which is not uncommon. And that's because it's a really big operation. We raise a fair bit of our budget in the United States. And we have someone in Canada, and we have someone who represents us in the UK, but they live in Israel and they travel because it's close. In Switzerland and Australia, we have ways of getting tax deductibility, but we don't have our own boards there. But thank you for reminding me, we probably should.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
All I would say, first, I would say thank you for the opportunity and thank you to those listening. The war may feel like it's coming to an end, and I hope our hostages and soldiers will return as soon as possible, as healthy as they can be. But it's not over. Even if we lay down our guns and there's no more fighting, and I'm hoping for that, of course, like everyone is, the damage that's been done to this country is monumental. So I'm just hoping and praying that all of those who've allowed us to dramatically increase our support for those in need will continue to do so and not think, unfortunately, that we're not still in emergency mode. I very much look forward to coming back on and saying emergency mode over, we're back to normal. But even then, there'll still be a lot of need, sadly, in the state of Israel.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at radiosefarad.com. See you next week.